From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
As this year's election nears, the debate continues over whether Florida's voting laws are too strict or not strict enough.
It takes away from our ability to be out and be actively registering voters.
Also this week, we'll listen in on an extended conversation with former Florida Governor Jeb Bush.
As a conservative, I have differing views in my own party, much less the policies of the other party.
We'll also get the latest on the proposed constitutional amendment regarding recreational marijuana in Florida and that new law that says local governments can't require outdoor workers to have regular water and cool down breaks during hot weather. I'm Tom Flanagan, online and on air. This is Capitol Report and the end of week wrap up of top stories from Tallahassee. This November will be the first presidential election since the Republican-controlled Florida legislature pushed through a series of laws that reduced access to ballot boxes, complicated voting by mail, and now, as of July 1st, curtailed the scope of grassroots voter registration groups. As Margie Menzel reports, Florida's GOP leaders say the measures were passed to eliminate fraud, although the state's election supervisors opposed them.
University of Florida student Anya Schwartzbauer started working with People Power for Florida this year. She's what they call an organizing fellow, helping students register to vote on campus and sometimes at events in Gainesville. Her work includes phone banking, text banking, social media, and
helping folks register their vote by mail ballots, since you have to re-request them every election cycle now.
Since the new law relating to groups like People Power went into effect, it's changed Schwartzbauer's job a lot.
It is very important to emphasize the amount of training it takes when new restrictions are put in place, because that takes away from our ability to be out and be actively registering voters. And instead, we're on a Zoom call learning what we need to adjust so that we can get back out there.
She says People Power for Florida is the only group she knows of using paper registration forms. She's collaborated with other groups on campus, but they use QR codes now. All this is happening due to a new law that has caused many third-party voter registration organizations, known as 3PVROs, to stop their work. That's because if they make a misstep, it could cost tens of thousands of dollars in fines. For instance, the new law shortens the deadline for turning in a form from 14 days to 10. The fine is $50 per day for every day a form is late, and up to $5,000 if a form arrives after the voter rolls close for a given election. Total fines could be as much as $250,000 per year, vastly more than the budget of a 3PVRO. In 2020, roughly 60,000 Floridians registered through a third-party group. So far in 2024, about 7,100 have done so. Democratic State Representative Anna Escamani of Orlando describes the state's enforcement of the new law as, quote, incredibly aggressive.
Breathing down the backs of what are small grassroots organizations who just want to help people vote.
She says it's dispiriting to feel the lack of state support.
To the point where we see the effect on the voter registration numbers. People are not getting registered to vote at the same rate 2-3 years ago. And it's not because people don't want to vote, it's because their opportunities to get registered have been stifled by these latest policies out of Tallahassee.
Data from the Florida Division of Elections shows 14.5 million active registered voters on the state's rolls at the end of 2022. Close to 2 years later, that number has dropped 8% to roughly 13.4 million as of May 31st. All in all, a loss of 1.1 million voters, with Democrats taking the brunt of those losses. Brad Ashwell, the state director of All Voting is Local, says it's an unfortunate time for his organization, which is dedicated to expanding the voting rolls.
Because we were constantly in a defensive posture, pushing back on these laws that restrict the access to voting and make it harder for people to vote when we would much rather be talking about how to expand access to vote by mail, how to, expand access to early voting, how to make sure it's easier for voters to vote.
There has been conjecture that the new laws are intended by Republican lawmakers to reduce Democratic registrations. Escamani of People Power for Florida says that's not what's important.
I could speculate on partisanship, but at the end of the day, like, voter registration doesn't matter what your party is. I believe very firmly that the more people who are civically engaged, the healthier democracy is.
That said, People Power for Florida tries to reach people who are typically not represented in government. Although, Escamani says, they're the ones who are affected the most. I'm Margie Menzel.
Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush is part of a political dynasty, with his brother and father both serving as president. Jeb Bush served two terms as governor and ran for president in 2016. On the Deeper Dive with Derek Kam podcast from the News Service of Florida, Bush shared some insights about today's polarized political environment. He says we need more civility and respect for people who disagree with us. Here's an excerpt.
I've been reflecting on the near assassination of a presidential candidate and the terminologies that we use in politics today. We need to figure out a different lexicon. I mean, you can disagree with people, and I disagreed with the Palm Beach Pravda all the time, the editorial board, but you don't have to personalize it. You don't have to, like, the vitriol and the exaggerating, you know, everybody's a Nazi or a fascist, people are trying to destroy democracy or they're stealing this. And God dang, man, I mean, lighten up. We can have different views. And, like, trust me, as a conservative, I have differing views in my own party, much less the policies of the other party. But I think there should be a higher degree of civility and respect for people. Because someone has a different view than you, it doesn't mean they're the enemy of anything. They might just be wrong. And there should be a higher degree of respect for having a different view.
I blame the internet. I don't blame the internet. I blame Twitter and social media. I think people turn into the worst version of themselves sometimes when they're sitting behind a screen.
You know, I customize how I access news, but I don't customize it to have all my views validated every day. And I try to encourage liberals to watch Hannity and conservatives to watch Rachel Maddow. And, you know, you may throw something at the television while you're doing it, but you get a different perspective that there's a ton of people in the country that, you know, have a different view than you. And that's okay. It's not the end of the world. But when you customize how you acquire news, and news then becomes, you know, opinion becomes truth or fact, you know, it makes you more righteous about your views, and it makes you less tolerant of other people's views. And that's what we got now. We've got a political environment where we have two tribes that are, you know, don't like each other. And in a hyper-polarized world, to your point, social media, you know, exacerbates all of this. Somehow we get beyond that.
How do we get beyond that? How do you think we fix it?
I don't know. I mean, historically, it's been a crisis that's kind of got people to change their mindsets, but that's a really bad way to organize a change. You know, to have a massive crisis, a financial crisis, or
a 9/11.
A 9/11. These are very traumatic experiences, and in the case of 9/11, it was not long lasting.
Yeah, it was a very brief moment of unity.
I do think people kind of obsess about politics and ignore culture. The simple way of describing this is we have 330 million people live in the country. Every day there are a trillion different interactions. And I think we're less kind with one another. We're less honest. We are more vulgar. And as our culture has changed, our politics mirrors our culture. And so ultimately, the way to change our politics is to change how we interact with one another. We're ripe for a cultural change. And out of that will come a different politics.
That was former Governor Jeb Bush on the Deeper Dive with Derek Kam podcast, a product of the News Service of Florida. You can hear the full episode wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up on Capitol Report, a proposed constitutional amendment legalizing recreational pot in Florida remains a contentious issue heading into the election.
For our kids and for Florida, I hope you will join us in voting no on Amendment 3 this November.
And it's a proposal that's still getting a lot of pushback from Governor Ron DeSantis.
If it's happened in California, you smell it everywhere, New York, all these places.
A statewide ban on local rules mandating water breaks for outside workers have both workers and some local governments doing a slow burn.
And we all deserve to not have to worry that we're going to pass out or have a stroke on the job.
And with a shortage of traditional space, some non-traditional schools are winding up in some unlikely locations.
That's opening up doors for us that weren't open before.
The group pushing the recreational marijuana ballot initiative has ramped up ad spending over the past few weeks. Tristan Wood reports the multi-million dollar fight for and against the proposal features some of the state's biggest political players.
Smart and Safe Florida is the PAC behind a proposed constitutional amendment to allow people 21 and over to use recreational marijuana. The group spent $5 million in just 1 week, from July 13th to July 19th. That spend was for ad placements across Florida, including a series of radio ads from well-known attorney and pro-pot advocate John Morgan. He believes the ballot initiative will increase liberty and stop people from going to jail for what he views as, quote, fake crime. Here he is speaking in one of those ads.
If I was your governor, I would free or parole every person in jail for possession and then expunge everyone's record. Amendment 3 will put a stop to this and let the cops fight real crime, not fake crime. I'm tired of people being thrown in jail for something that is less harmful than alcohol or opioids.
Smart and Safe Florida has raised $66 million so far. More than $56 million of that has come from Clearwater-based medical marijuana giant Trulieve, with the rest of the money predominantly coming from other cannabis companies. Morgan Hill, Smart and Safe Florida's spokesperson, says many Floridians already consume illicit cannabis recreationally, but that consumption can be dangerous because it is not regulated.
If we are able to legalize recreational marijuana, that would mean that Floridians have access to marijuana that has been tested, it has been regulated, and they know that what they are consuming doesn't have dangerous substances laced in it, like fentanyl, like meth, like pesticides.
As cannabis companies have launched their campaigns for legalization, some prominent Republican politicians, including Governor Ron DeSantis, have come out against it. DeSantis says he doesn't like what he sees in other states that have legalized recreational marijuana.
It has been tried. This happened in Colorado. Most people there regret that it happened. It happened in California. You smell it everywhere. New York, all these places.
The governor has used his bully pulpit to express concerns that legalizing cannabis will increase other drug use and lead to rampant smoking in public.
There's some people, like business owners, some of them said, well, you know, I don't really like it, but I'll just tell people you can't do it in my restaurant or in my hotel. I don't think it's going to be that simple. I think this is written so broadly with no limitations that people are going to assert the right to be able to do this, regardless of what a private property owner said.
Our governor says it's going to cause a stink. Come on, dog.
Morgan says the proposal's opponents are fear-mongering about recreational cannabis the same way some fear-mongered about medical cannabis before it was passed.
The only smell I smell is the stench out of Tallahassee's politicians.
And Hill doesn't agree that passing the amendment will lead to widespread smoking without regulation. She says the ballot initiative gives the legislature power to make rules about marijuana just as it does for other substances in the state.
Right now in the state of Florida, you cannot drink alcohol in certain public places, and we fully expect that the legislature would implement those same regulations on where people can and cannot consume cannabis.
DeSantis isn't just using his words to push against the ballot initiative. Members of his staff have launched a political action committee called the Florida Freedom Fund to combat both the cannabis ballot initiative and the abortion rights ballot initiative. So far, the fund has raised $700,000, significantly less than the PACs advocating for the proposals. If Floridians were to vote on the ballot initiative today, polling suggests it would pass. A recent Fox News poll found 66% of Floridians support recreational pot, more than the 60% needed for the proposal to pass. I'm Tristan Wood.
Florida law enforcement and healthcare experts are weighing in on that state constitutional amendment that would legalize recreational cannabis in Florida. Some officers oppose the legislation. Others say it's what's best for the communities they serve. Adrian Andrews has that story.
Amendment 3 will hit November's ballot, giving millions of registered voters the opportunity to weigh in on the popular drug. Currently in the state, only medical marijuana is legal. Patients are required to have an active medical marijuana card, which can only be received from a physician with a qualifying medical condition.
We have in Florida a very robust and terrific medical cannabis program.
Aaron Bloom is a healthcare attorney and the CEO of DocMJ, a Tampa-based physician group that provides medical marijuana recommendations and medical cards. He says medical and recreational cannabis are drugs used to reach a certain level of comfort, but it's the effects that set them apart.
The medical products tend to be more products that are lower in THC and higher in the CBD's portion of it. So they give you the relief without that psychoactive high. If you are searching solely for recreational use, then most people are going to want the much higher level THC.
Florida Sheriff's Association President and Charlotte County Sheriff Bill Pumel announced his opposition to Amendment 3. He believes the legislation will bring more public health issues and road safety concerns caused by impaired drivers.
Drivers involved in traffic fatalities have increasingly tested positive for marijuana.
The state's Police Chief Association has similar concerns. Some officials say the amendment's passage will ruin the healthcare industry by lowering the value of prescription cannabis and creating a, quote, bigger black market. However, Attorney Bloom says that's not entirely true.
We've looked at other states where, that have gone through this, that have been medical and then legalized it for recreational use, and patients still go to their doctors. Many patients still are more comfortable getting the guidance through their physician.
Some Florida law enforcement have broken with their respective groups on the issue. Gaston County Sheriff Morris Young endorsed Amendment 3 in July, writing a two-page opinion piece in the Tallahassee Democrat, urging voters to approve the legislation. Young said with Amendment 3, his deputies will be able to focus more on getting drugs like fentanyl off the streets and spend less time arresting citizens from fiscally constrained communities for carrying small amounts of marijuana. Brumell, the Charlotte County Sheriff, thinks otherwise.
States have seen a 25% increase in adolescent marijuana use disorder and a decline in risk perception, culminating in an increase in illicit behavior.
Amendment 3 would only apply to adults over the age of 20. The measure requires 60% of voter approval to pass. Even still, the state legislature will likely implement rules on when adults can legally use the drug or how much marijuana a person can have. Possession of more than 20 grams of marijuana is a felony in Florida, with possible imprisonment up to 5 years and fines of up to $5,000. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Heat advisories are being issued around the state with regularity this summer. Forecasters and reporters are trying to come up with innovative ways to say the same thing, as we hear from our partners at WLRN in Miami.
I'm Carlton Gillespie.
And I'm Veronica Saragovia.
We've covered so many heat advisories that we're starting to get worried about sounding repetitive.
The National Weather Service has issued a heat advisory today for the entire region. The maximum
heat advisory is in effect for all of South Florida today from 10 a.m. through 6 p.m. The National
Weather Service. So we started getting creative.
Hot town, summer in the city.
Hot town indeed. Parts of South Florida are under another heat advisory.
Man, it's a hot one.
Yep, it's yet another hot one today. Most of South Florida is under a heat advisory.
The repetition and the great music should not lose anyone's attention, because record heat is dangerous to the nearly 500,000 people who work outdoors in Florida. That's according to the Florida Policy Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization.
Yeah, it's important to highlight
just how many people work in outdoor industries in Florida and the different roles that they might have.
That's Alexis Tsikalis. She's a senior analyst at the Florida Policy Institute, and she's an author of a recently released report titled High Heat, Higher Responsibility. The report calls on Florida state government to repeal a new law that bans local governments from enforcing rest, shade, and water breaks.
We all need to be safe, and we all deserve to not have to worry that we're going to pass out or have a stroke on the job.
In Florida, outdoor workers have jobs in construction, amusement and recreation, and landscaping. Also in tourism and hospitality. Tsikalis says heat protections safeguard workers and the state economy, because when people get ill from heat, they can't work.
I spoke to Mike Norris, who works outdoors pressure cleaning and sealing driveways and rooftops all over South Florida. He told me that he's got his PhD in dealing with extreme heat.
No joke down here, especially in South Florida. This time of year, you know, we've had people have to stop for the day and go home, or luckily we haven't had any cases where somebody had to go to the hospital, but it does happen. Even in the shade sometimes, it's hot. It gets pretty brutal.
Carlton, first, Miami-Dade County commissioners did try to pass an ordinance to provide heat-related protections for outdoor workers like Mike Norris late last year. But those efforts stalled, and last month, that new state law went into effect in Florida, banning these local protections.
But that hasn't stopped activists from demanding action at the local level. Recently, in the middle of yet another heat advisory, I went to a rally in Brickell, south of downtown Miami, urging the Miami-Dade County Commissioners, despite the new law, to act to combat extreme heat. I spoke to Matt Ellis Ramirez and Ana Biamisar, two of the rally's organizers from the advocacy group Sunrise Movement Miami.
I'm here because we're on day 21 of extreme heat in Miami this summer, and us young people are here and tired of having to face this extreme heat on our own.
For three different solutions. One of our solutions is green union jobs. Another one is nature-based solutions. And the third one is a bold cooling center standard.
Those cooling centers were established by the county. They're essentially designated areas with shade or other cooling resources that are open to the public. The issue? Not all of them have standardized hours or facilities on offer. For instance, most of the cooling centers are libraries, but they're closed on Sundays. Nature-based solutions include adding trees and green space to communities who lack that infrastructure, and green union jobs means hiring local workers to carry out those improvements.
And it's not just getting sweaty we're worried about. That Florida Policy Institute report points to data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention between 2018 and 2022 that showed Florida led the country in the number of ER visits and hospitalizations for heat-related illness. This could include heat stroke, which can be deadly. For someone with firsthand experience working with heat illness, we went outside of Jackson Memorial Hospital's busy emergency department to speak with the chief medical officer.
Hi, I'm Dr. Hani Atala.
Dr. Atala says that people especially at risk include children and teens who are outdoors a lot, and people 65 and older with chronic conditions who take medications.
So if we're outside with our grandmother and she starts to feel dizzy and lightheaded, we need to really move grandmother to a more cooler climate, get her in the car, crank up the air conditioner, move her inside of a building, and really get her some cool water to drink and let her sit and rest.
This will help move the body temperature back down. People who train or work outside also need to take breaks, eat, and keep hydrated. Dr. Randy Katz works as a division chief of emergency services for the Memorial Healthcare System in Broward. He's also the chief medical officer for the city of Hollywood. Katz says if someone is experiencing heat stroke, their body temperature needs to drop quickly.
In EMS, one of the things that you're starting to see is treatment out in the field. So there's now a bag that you can put a patient in, fill it with ice, and reduce core body temperature within minutes. So there are some agencies around the state of Florida that are now using these hypothermic bags that can be filled with ice and a patient can be put in them in the field when they're identified as a heat stroke patient.
Because when the body's core temperature gets too high, it can have serious consequences on our organs.
Your kidneys shut down, your brain function is affected, You can develop all types of cardiovascular complications, heart rate, blood pressure. People that have pre-existing heart disease or even diabetes are at much more risk of complications than, you know, a younger healthy person.
Humidity makes it harder for sweat to evaporate to cool us off. When temperatures are well into the 90s and we have a lot of humidity, it'll feel even hotter.
For instance, if humidity is at 60% and the temperature reads 90 degrees Fahrenheit, it's actually going to feel like 100.
Whoa, the heat is on.
I'm Veronica Saragovia.
And I'm Carlton Gillespie.
Thanks to our partners at WLRN in Miami for that report. You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, under a new education law in Florida, private, charter, and micro schools can now lease certain public spaces and turn them into classrooms. WLRN's Jimena Romero has more on that story.
A library, community service organization, museum, performing arts venue, theater, cinema, or even a church. These communal settings all have one thing in common. They could now lease the space to private schools, as well as charter and micro schools for classroom use. Part of a sweeping education bill's package makes it legal to do so. Ryan Delk is the CEO and founder of Primer, a network that helps teachers launch micro schools or small private learning environments in Florida and Arizona. He also pushed lawmakers to support the policy.
All in, this adds about 50,000 new locations where new micro schools and other types of innovative schools can open across the state of Florida.
Primer has 16 schools in South Florida and is opening three more in the region, made possible in part by the new legislation. The policy bypasses local land use and zoning restrictions, which was once a primary barrier for opening private charter and micro schools.
That's huge for us. That's opening up doors for us that weren't open before.
That's Felicia Rattray. She's the founder and director of Permission to Succeed Education Center, a micro school that operates from a Salvation Army building in Fort Lauderdale. Before she rented that space 3 years ago, Rattray says she had a hard time finding a place to move the micro school as it was growing.
Either the rent was insanely ridiculous, or I found the perfect spot only to discover it wasn't zoned for a school, so I couldn't take it. The process at the onset was extremely depressing.
Now, Rattray says she has the goal of opening a micro school in every Florida county. That's a troubling thought, at least according to Aaron Kuntz, the dean for the School of Education at Florida International University.
And the worry becomes when these micro schools pop up and are positioned within public spaces without the regulatory eye of the local communities and districts, it could have, I think, a negative effect on the public schools we're trying to fund.
All locations will continue to go through state inspections for fire and health safety. I'm Jimena Romero in Miami.
Our regular Capital Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Derek Hamm, Veronica Zaragovia, Carlton Gillespie, and Jimena Romero. Technical support for Capital Report comes from Evan Rossi, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capital Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.